Cabu Foundation.
From what I've heard, the district isn't even preparing anything for the mediations anymore.
Now, is that to say then that they, I mean, I've read some stuff where the teachers accuse the district of not seriously entering into the negotiations.
Yeah, I think they've given up. The district just isn't negotiating anymore.
What would the district gain by not negotiating with the teachers?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think the district is starting to look worse and worse, and I think the teachers are starting to get more community support.
And although Dan Jones with the Medford Education Association couldn't definitively say that Medford parents supported the teacher's strike, he did say parents have not been happy with what their kids have been going through.
What we're hearing from the parents today is that, and this is the first day back with kids, that it's been an absolute debacle. We've got high school students walking out of the school. We've got overcrowding in the elementary schools because of how they've set it up. So what we're hearing right now is that the parents are not happy with the way it's going.
So then the parents are feeling as though the district isn't really doing a good job meeting students' needs while the teachers are out on strike.
What our superintendent went on the media saying is that we were going to offer quality instruction in our classroom, and everything that we've seen today, that is not happening. And so what we're asking parents is, if they're hearing one thing from the superintendent and they're seeing another with the education that's going on, is that the same thing that's going on with their negotiations?
Back in Portland, the district told teachers who refused to cross picket lines that they would be fired. But Mr. Kippelman says his union representatives have told Portland Association of Teachers members that that is a potentially illegal action by the district. Well, you know, the school district put out a notice a couple of days ago that said any teacher that does not cross the picket line is in danger of losing their job.
The PAT's already filed an unfair labor practice about that. That's a hollow threat, and they're just doing that to intimidate substitutes.
Mr. Jones didn't say whether a similar threat was issued to Medford teachers. Both Mr. Kippelman and Mr. Jones say both groups of teachers will be drawing from a small stipend from union dues to help support them during the strike, but neither sounds ready to give up.
For the most part, they're doing this because they care. They are out there fighting hard for the students that they teach every day, for the working conditions, because those working conditions are the students' learning conditions.
As a substitute, I will not cross the picket line.
And is the mood at all of the schools that you sub at the same?
Pretty much, yeah.
Are the students a force in this strike negotiation?
They are more of a force than I've ever seen before. It's incredible the amount of support we're getting from them.
How much support can students really give, though?
They can refuse to go to class during a strike. They can hold walkouts to bring the message to a larger audience, which they've been doing. The students were there. The student union leaders were at the strike vote last Wednesday at the Arlene Schnitzer.
Are you ready to go out on strike?
I'm ready, yes.
I'm Don Merrill, KBOO News.
The Right to Dream 2 houseless rest area in Portland will get a hearing at Portland City Council meeting tomorrow morning at 9:30. City Hall, Southwest 4th and Main, it's open to the public. The new proposal will provide the organizers of the rest area with over $800,000 to relocate from 4th and Burnside. The developers who negotiated the deal made one stipulation, that the houseless encampment would not be allowed to move to the site under the Broadway Bridge. For more, KBOO's Sequoia Wright spoke with Ibrahim Mubarak, one of the founders of Right to Dream 2.
I am speaking with Ibrahim Mubarak, representative and active of Right to Dream 2. A news story just came out that Right to Dream 2 has been granted by the Pearl District developers over $1 million.
Well, it's not really altogether, it may be $1 million, but our partial would be $849, and that would go into a land trust fund to help us purchase our own land that we would own.
And really quick, Ibrahim, give a quick background on how this all got started and how we got to this part.
Right to Dream 2 was a direct action of Right to Survive, where we noticed that houseless people was being criminalized for exercising their human rights, and that's sleep and other things like being able to use the restroom or being able to properly shave themselves or wash their clothes. You know, all these things houseless people that live on the street can't do or can't acquire because it's no place for them like that. The shelters are there for them to sleep at night, but not to educate them on their rights so they know, you know, if anything unjust is imposed on them, they know to speak up and fight against. And that's where Right to Survive come in. We teach them and educate them about their human, constitutional, and civil rights. So we did a pitch a tent campaign where the city allowed people to put a tent the day before the Rose Festival parade so they can sleep overnight on the sidewalk and wake up and watch a parade. But then they don't allow people who's struggling in this society without homes or apartments or campers to sleep on the street to do that as a way, a means of survival. So we ran into a disgruntled landowner who was angry with the city because they wouldn't let him do what he wanted to do with his own property. And so we negotiated and met with him and came up with a good concept of having a rest area where people can go and get proper rest, because that's one of the main things houseless people look for is to sleep. And once you sleep and get that proper rest, you can figure out what to do with your life. And in that, people became successful once they, you know, got that rest. You know, we got over 95 people in 2 years to, you know, get housed, and over 85 people to find work. 10 people kicked their own drug addiction, and 6 women was able to have babies and keep their babies because we sent them to midwife, which is not obligated to contact DHS, and they come and take your baby and make you jump through hoops to prove you're a good parent, you know. So these are the things, the accomplishment that we're proud of with our rest area. Okay. And in that, the city wanted us to get a permanent site, and we sued the city because they was fining us illegally and calling us a recreational campsite, and that's not what we are. So with the help of Commissioner Amanda Fritz, she was going to move us to a permanent site under the Broadway Bridge, which we was kind of reluctant on moving, but if it's something that was going to be ours, where we can continue the success on helping houseless people, we was going to say yes. And then this outcry came by the Pearl District developer, the community, the residential community around that area. And so they gave us a lot of negative backlash, and they told us the Pearl District developer told us they would work with us on finding a legit site. This money that they given us is not going to be enough to buy land in the hub of downtown where all the social service agencies are at. And so they practically telling us, here goes some money, now get away from us, go far out. So we hoping that maybe we can use that money as a down payment on some land that's close to the downtown Portland, and we can make payments, have a note, or maybe some philanthropists that want to see justice done can add to the kitty.
All right, I've been speaking with Ibrahim Mubarak, activist and spokesperson for Right to Dream 2. They will be having a sign-off hearing February 12th. And what's the time?
10 o'clock. Well, 10 o'clock? It started at 9:30, so come there because I'll be speaking to city council also.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ibrahim.
Thank you much. Thanks for having me and invite me anytime.
That was Kebu Sequoia Wright, who spoke with Ibrahim Mubarak, one of the founders of Right to Dream 2, which is devoted to help the houseless survive with basic needs.
They say they need to cut the budget in this wealthiest of nations. Plenty of money for other things, but not for education. The rich keep getting richer while they're shutting down the schools.
That was David Rovics performing The Lives of Children.
But there's only so far that can go, because if you keep on pushing people, they'll eventually push back, you know. If you
that was David Rovics performing a song called The Lives of Children.
Expect them always to just turn the other cheeks. So we will strike against the closures, strike for a brighter day, strike for the lives of children, strike for the right.
KB volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So we are asking you to now do the same. And joining us right now are Sam Bowman and Barbara Bernstein to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you, Nat. Thank you, Kristen. Yes, we are here with KBOO's Community Radio, KBOO Community Radio's Winter Membership Drive. Please call 877-500-5266 while I'm talking to you, and our volunteers here at the phones will be happy to take your call and explain how you can donate to KBOO and become a member today, now.
Well, Sam, you are actually a KBOO News volunteer, isn't that true?
I am.
And as I'm listening, because what we get to hear, which you don't hear at home, is all the back talk that goes on between the control room and the hosts, and it's been very interesting to me to kind of listen to how much it happens behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
And to think that this is all being done by volunteers. And then the thing that really blows my mind is I'm also looking at the run sheet, and I'm looking at some of the stories that we're going to be hearing about today and realizing that these are not things that you hear about anywhere else in the media. Or if you do hear about them, you hear about them as kind of in passing without any kind of in-depth. Like, you don't have, a five-minute interview with the person who's responsible for the Right to Dream 2 movement to house the houseless people in Portland. Things like this, the reason why we can bring you stories like this is because we depend on you. We don't depend on corporations. We don't depend, unfortunately, on the government anymore, who used to give us some money, but they don't anymore. We don't depend on lobbyists. We don't depend on the forces that fuel capitalism and fuel a market economy. We are kind of the anti-market economy. We are here because we believe in what we're broadcasting. We believe in you, and we want to bring you the news and information that serves your lives, that connects to what you care about, and is going to actually help to lift you up to a better place. And you can help lift us up to that better place by calling 877-500-5266 right now and become a member. For $10 a month, we'll take it out of your bank account, and you get to have this incredible feeling of really contributing to a cause and to a connection here in Portland that is so vital, and which I really believe has shaped the city and transformed it in many ways in the over 40 years that I've lived here. I moved here just shortly after KBOO went on the air, and I've got to see the city really, really transform itself. And I believe that having a community radio as strong, a community radio station as strong as KBOO, really has an impact on creating a city that cares about each other.
And KBOO Evening News, which you're listening to right now, is indeed very unique in Portland. And not just for the stories that we bring you, but for the access we give our volunteers to training to become reporters, producers, and to report back to their community on issues that affect them. And you, that training and the broadcast of the news is supported by our volunteers, by our members, 100%. And you can become a member and help support the KBOO Evening News by calling 877-500-5266, or you can get us online at kboo.fm.
Say, Sam, I'm going to just throw out a few things that are
Absolutely.
Reasons why people should be contributing to help support KBOO and the KBOO News. First of all, think about how media consolidation is just upward, it's just climbing and climbing. We now have a newspaper that only publishes 4 days a week but charges you for 7 days a week, just like they used
yes,
to when they
do.
Came up for seven. And the as much as I think the Oregonian is better than it was 40 years ago, it still really leaves out a lot of stories that matter to all of us. KBOO fills in that niche, fills in those holes by telling the stories that are left out by the mass media. And then even in Portland, which is touted as being, you know, one of the most progressive cities in the country, five companies own all of the majority of the media, whether it's Entercom, CBS, Clear Channel, Salem Communications, and Bustos Media. And that's what makes KBOO important, because we are not owned by anybody but you. And if you want to become a KBOO member right now, and we really urge you to become a KBOO owner, become a KBOO owner by calling 877-500-5266. When you join KBOO, become a member of KBOO, you actually are becoming an owner of our incredible listener-sponsored community radio experience.
And, of course, you can also donate online at kboo.fm, where we also have archived audio from our newscasts and other public affairs programming. And of course, that's KBOO.FM and 877-500-5266. Donate now.
This evening at 7 p.m., protesters are gathering at the port of Umatilla to confront the third megalode moving through Oregon headed to the Alberta tar sands. Equipment shipped in this load will be used for extracting tar sands oil, supplying the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. There have been over 10 regional actions in the past 2 months in response to the megalodes and tar sands extraction. One major concern for activists is that Oregon is becoming a long-term corridor for heavy-haul equipment bound for the tar sands and other fossil fuel infrastructure projects.
The Oregon State Senate Judiciary Committee held a public hearing Tuesday in Salem on a number of Senate bills. One of the proposed bills discussed today would allow local governments to regulate medical marijuana dispensaries.
We're going to start off with Senate Bill 1531.
Members of the committee, Senate Bill 1531 comes to me from Senator Hansel Monroe. It specifies the governing body of city or county may regulate or restrict the operation of medical marijuana facilities.
Senate Bill 1531 is a local control bill. It simply gives cities and counties the necessary authority to regulate marijuana dispensaries, to control where they will be or if they will be at all within their particular city, and gives them the necessary authority. You know, city councilors, mayors, and county commissioners are elected, and they're elected locally by the local people, and they often know best what's good for their particular community. What this bill does is it gives them, those locally elected officials, the necessary responsibility for regulating marijuana dispensaries. And I would urge your support to move this bill on down.
Senator Floyd Prozanski, a Democrat from Eugene, told the Oregonian this week that authority for regulating medical marijuana outlets should remain the job of the state and not local governments. But defenders of the legislation say that local governments should be able to facilitate how cities regulate marijuana dispensaries once the bill passes. The legislation allowing local control over marijuana dispensaries was filed at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities, who testified at today's hearing.
Local control gives local governments the responsibilities to zone and site the dispensaries. It gives cities and counties the opportunity to do it thoughtfully. I understand that the City of Ashland has already amended their ordinances to facilitate them. Senate Bill 1531 would not impair Ashland or any other city from doing this. But on the flip side, Senate Bill 1531 would also allow a community to regulate in a different way what Ashland has chosen to do. Local control is the key. Senate Bill 1531 will make this authority clear and avoid unnecessary costly litigation for our local partners. I want to protect Oregon cities and counties from having to litigate, which most assuredly will happen. Senate Bill 1531 is a bipartisan bill with strong support from the League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, Association of Chiefs of Police, and the Oregon District Attorneys Association. We need to help our local partners, and Senate Bill 1531 gives them the help they need. I urge you to pass Senate Bill 1531. Thank you.
My name's Kevin Campbell. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. We also come here today to support Senate Bill 1531 with the adoption of the amendments, as Mr. Bovet mentioned them. We obviously play a role as police chiefs with local governments as they're making a wide range of decisions. We provide input, frankly. We provide perspective. But in the end, it's the local officials that are elected by citizens who make the final call. And so in some jurisdictions around the state, dispensaries will be fully recognized and embraced, and in others they will not, based on the sensibilities, challenges, and concerns within each local government. And so we support the clarification in Senate Bill 1531 that they do have the ability to regulate.
If the bill passes, it would be effective March 1st, 2 days before the state begins registering medical marijuana facilities. The Oregon State Senate Judiciary Committee is also expected to hold a hearing this month on a bill that would refer a marijuana legalization proposal to Oregon voters.
More than a dozen candidates for Oregon's new foster care ombudsman position are being interviewed in Salem this week. One unique aspect of these interviews is that current and former foster youth are among the panelists asking the questions. For more, we go to KBOO's Susan Cecil in collaboration with the Oregon News Service.
Oregon officials are interviewing candidates for a new position. The person selected will be an advocate for youth in foster care. And the interviews for the new job are being conducted by youth with firsthand experience in the system. The Oregon Foster Youth Connection is a group of current and former foster children ages 14 to 25. The group spent the past few years convincing the legislature of the need for a Bill of Rights for foster children. Representatives of that group are now participating on the interview teams. Zach Miller of Eugene describes some of what he expects from the new youth advocate.
I'd like to see passion for foster youth, passion to see the right thing done. I think one of the most important things is to ask them what inspired them to apply for the position and to see, you know, what sort of experience they have with foster youth in care.
The new position has attracted a wide variety of applicants from across the country, with backgrounds in fields like social work, law, and juvenile corrections. The governor's advocacy office says that in this job, an applicant's personality and character could matter more than their credentials. There are about 10,000 children in foster care in Oregon. Once the right person is hired, Pamela Butler with Children First for Oregon says they'll have a lot of responsibility.
Their job is going to be to come in and set up a hotline that youth can call, to set up a formal grievance procedure, and all of that is going to be happening with youth input from the Oregon Foster Youth Connection.
The new position was created by legislation that went into effect January 1st. It also requires the Foster Children's Bill of Rights be explained to kids in age-appropriate terms by their caseworkers and posted in every foster home in Oregon. For KBOO News, I'm Susan Cecil.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO KBOO Evening News, and we would like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program simply by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Out Loud at 6 tonight. Tonight's Out Loud will have recorded panel discussion examining the power of the gay press to inform and celebrate the LGBT community in Portland. And at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's Hard Knock will end today's KBOO's fight back against the NSA with a day of protests against mass surveillance. Tomorrow's weather should be nice, with a high of 50 degrees and 80% chance of rain. And tomorrow, and a low of 43 degrees with showers. In today's Radcast, the only citizen-led radiation count on the air, radiation levels for today are, counts per minute in North Portland, is 32 CPM. Powell Butte measures 27 counts per minute. Seaside, Oregon has 33 CPM with a high of 55. Hanford, Washington has 28 CPM and a high of 50. And Sitka, Alaska has a radiation count of 27 counts per minute with spikes up to 123. EPA alert levels start at 100 CPM. More information can be found out online at radcast.org. Wish that you made. I see it in your eyes. You might say you know, but your heart never lied. Yeah. Ooh, so let's get down and shake the ground. Open up your arms.
It is 5:29. Time for the daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
You know what America needs? More jobs, that's what. Not Walmart-style jobettes, but real jobs. Stable ones, with a good salary and benefits. Union jobs, so workers have a say in what goes on. Jobs that have strong protections against discrimination. A job you could make a career. Do useful work, take pride in it, earn promotions, and be respected for what you do. Believe it or not, there is at least one place where such jobs still exist. But, and you really aren't going to believe this, those in charge are pushing like hell to eliminate them, turning positions that ought to be a model for American job growth into just another bunch of jobettes. The place? Your local post office. Right-wing government haters in Congress, along with the corporate executives now sitting atop the U.S. Postal Service, claim that in order to save this icon of Americana, they must decimate it. These geniuses are privatizing the workforce, selling off the invaluable community facilities and shrinking services. Hello, the workers, facilities, and services are what make the post office iconic and give it such potential for even greater public use. Their latest ploy is a partnership with Staples, the big box office supply chain. In a pilot program, 82 Staples outlets have opened, quote, postal units to sell the most popular and most profitable mail products. Rather than being staffed by well-trained and knowledgeable postal workers, however, the many POs will have an ever-changing crew of Staples' low-wage temporary sales clerks with weak performance standards and no public accountability. This is Jim Hightower saying, cheapening postal work might be good for a few profiteers like Staples, but it will diminish postal service, and it's exactly the wrong direction for America to be going. For info and action, go to apwu.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And you are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. So now it is your turn. And joining us now in the studio again are Sam Bowman and Barbara Bernstein to talk to you about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
So we'll let you know how it's your turn and how you can make it your turn. The first thing you do is you go to your phone and you call 877-500-5266, or you can go onto your computer and punch in kboo.fm and make a pledge for $10 a month, which we can take out of your bank account electronically, and it'll just become a wonderful habit, a much better habit than coffee or cigarettes or any of the other habits that you might be trying to break. Get the KBOO habit and keep us going, because your habit is our benefit. Your habit is our ability to bring you news that we do five nights a week, bring you public affairs at least 5 days a week, to bring you all kinds of music and spoken word programming and things you never hear on the radio anywhere else on the dial. With a feeling, I feel very fortunate to live in a city that actually has four public radio stations, but there's something that really sets KBOO apart from the other public radio stations, that we are the only one that's really a community station. We're the only one that has... it's basically all volunteer driven and volunteer powered, and that we are really local. Almost everything you hear on KBOO, with a few exceptions like Democracy Now!, are programs that are produced by our local volunteers. And the news department is not just doesn't just produce a news show 5 days a week. They also do a huge amount of training, and a lot of our news volunteers have gone on to more glorious positions than KBOO. But some of them have actually brought with them the ethos and the values that KBOO instills. Some of them, unfortunately, have not. And there's like one person in particular I hear in NPR, and I think, God, you were such a better newscaster on KBOO. And that's because we give a kind of freedom that you don't get on other outlets, even on NPR. It's a freedom with restraint. It's a freedom that you can really speak truth to power, but you also have to take the responsibility of getting your facts straight, and that's what we do here in the KBOO News. So support us right now. Give a call at 877-500-5266. You can go online and join us that way by clicking on the tip jar at kboo.fm and become a member right now.
Yes, and as you were saying, Barbara, there are some people who have gone on from the KBOO News to other news outlets, newspapers, OPB even, and that's because the training that you receive as a volunteer here at the in the newsroom is real. It's you learn how to talk to the movers and shakers in town, how to find stories, how to journalistic ethics, all that stuff that is sometimes kind of hard to find in the mainstream media. And so we want to thank you for supporting that. And if you do, you can support it by calling 877-500-5266. And today we also want to thank the restaurants that have been supplying us with food so that we don't just fall over here at the microphones. Today that was Jam at 2239 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, Voodoo Donuts at 1501 Northeast Davis, Arabian Nights at 1434 Southwest Park Avenue, Le Bistro Montage at 301 Southeast Morrison Street. Thank you very much.
And we have a goal this hour for to raise $200. I'm not exactly sure how far we are. We've heard a few phones ring during the course of the last 35 minutes. But help us make our goal right now by calling 877-500-5266. Or go online to kboo.fm and click on the tip jar and become a member and a participant in this ongoing, extremely exciting adventure of community radio. And I've done a lot of traveling around, and I always enjoy when I hit a city that has a community radio station. And in fact, some of the oddest cities that you wouldn't think of as being centers of progressive thought, have some of the best stations, like Salt Lake City has a great community radio station. And when you go to a town where there's a community radio station, it's a really great way to find the community. And if you just moved to Portland and you just happen to go to the left side of the dial and wander onto 90.7, you've been listening to us, think about how much you're learning about the city that you've just chosen to move to and live in and become part of, and how you probably have learned about businesses that you didn't know existed. You've learned about events that are happening. You know, you've found out like about the Megalodes protest that's happening tonight in Umatilla, and if you want to go to that, you better get going because it's starting really soon. But this is the kind of information that we share with you and we connect you with. So connect with us. Call 877-500-5266. Go online, kboo.fm. Become a member of KBOO right now.
And, of course, call in. Our volunteers are waiting. Join your friends who you have been hearing call in over the past few minutes. 877-500-5266.
Postal workers, unions, and advocates argue recent reports showing significant financial losses are skewed. Last week, the United States Postal Service, in tandem with the media, released the most recent Postal Service financial report for the final calendar quarter of 2013, showing a loss of $354 million. The reason for the reported loss was a $1.425 billion charge for a mandated payment to a federal budget account for future retiree health care. The payment was never made, but recorded as a liability. KBOO News reporter Stephen Sherritt spoke with Jamie Partridge, a former postal worker and current member of the Communities and Postal Workers United, for more about this mandate and its effect on the United States Postal Service.
In 2006, Congress imposed a mandate Postal Service pre-fund retiree health benefits 75 years in advance, which means that every year the Postal Service is saddled with a $5.5 billion payment into the U.S. Treasury, which basically goes toward deficit reduction. It is unnecessary. There's no other agency that has to do this. No private corporation would do this, pre-funding retiree health benefits 75 years in advance within a 10-year period. And this loss, this reported loss by the Postal Service, is actually an accounting swindle. There, the Postal Service is not making this payment that Congress has mandated, but they're reporting it on the books. They haven't made this payment for the last 3 years. So in actuality, the Postal Service is operating at a profit, and this past quarter, their operating profit was $765 million, but the official press release and, of course, the mainstream media duly reported it as a loss because they factored in this pre-funding mandate, which isn't even being paid.
Why is the United States Postal Service the only enterprise in America that's required by law to pre-fund future retiree benefits?
Those of us that are postal workers and community members who have been investigating and concerned about what's happening to the Postal Service think that it's a purposeful dismantling and privatizing of the Postal Service. The eventual goal is to sell it off to Wall Street. There's a $66 billion enterprise here backed up by a $1 trillion mailing industry, which the Wall Street financiers want to get their hands on. And they, of course, would not provide universal service. The Postal Service has to provide universals, you know, to every address in the country at universal rates, you know, from the outback in Alaska to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And of course, private sector would just scoop up the profitable portions, the downtown and suburbs, and leave the rural areas and low-income neighborhoods to twist in the wind.
What is being done to combat this potential privatization of the U.S. Postal Service?
Well, we have a grassroots network called Communities and Postal Workers United in about 20 cities. We have coalitions, and then, of course, there are four postal unions that are fighting the closing of mail processing plants, the outsourcing of retail operations, the threatened elimination of six-day delivery, and all these other cuts and closures that are happening. We in Portland have occupied a post office, which led to several arrests to prevent its closure. It was unsuccessful. That was the University Station. We also occupied the Salem plant, trying to prevent its closure. We were unsuccessful. We had a civil disobedience action in the Springfield mail processing plant, seven arrests. The plant has not been closed yet. Actually, there's been a postponement for 3 months. We're also occupying some management offices in downtown at the Portland main office, and we're about to go to trial on March 12th for the attempt to stop the contracting out of mail processing, mail trucking, and mail handling here in Portland. If our folks want to be supportive of what's happening here in Portland, there's a 8 a.m. March 12th rally outside the Hatfield Federal Courthouse in support of the postal protectors, the seven of us that were arrested, attempting to present a petition of over 1,000 signatures to the district manager, Erica Bricks, and we're calling her to the witness stand. She won't meet with us. Well, we'll meet with her in court.
Well, Jamie, I'd like to thank you for your time, and if there's anything else you'd like to add, you have an opportunity right now.
Okay, if folks are interested in getting involved locally with our Portland Communities and Postal Workers United, they can call my number, 503-752-5112. And the Postal Service is a people's postal service. It doesn't belong and shouldn't belong to the private sector.
That was Jamie Partridge of Communities and Postal Workers United and KBOO's own Stephen Sherritt. For more information on this issue and others, or to get involved, go to Communities and Postal Workers United website at www.cpwunited.com, as well as the American Postal Workers Union website at www.apwu.org.
And now we go to our friends at National Native News for the latest headlines from Native America.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Officials are examining issues with the justice system in Indian country. Major crime cases on tribal lands often go through the federal court system. In states like Wyoming, federal courts are far away from the reservation, which causes challenges. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhurov has more.
The geographic distance of courts from the communities they serve brings up logistical issues. In Wyoming, the Wind River Indian Reservation has high rates of poverty, and people often lack reliable vehicles or the funds to make a trip to the Cheyenne Federal Courthouse, which is 300 miles away. Public transportation is extremely limited, and in the winter, roads are often dangerous. Plus, as Assistant U.S. Attorney Carrie Jacobson says, justice is not happening in the communities where the crime was committed.
I would like to see cases brought to trial in our area because then the community could see what the process is and that the process is fair and it does work because they lose faith in the system.
In addition, she says a local trial could result in a more representative jury, which rarely happens now.
You'll have people that have not been to the reservation, that do not participate in any sort of Native American traditions or social activities, never heard of a powwow or a sweat or anything like that. Things that are prevalent in the facts that we're going to present to them.
A recent report by the Indian Law and Order Commission highlighted this problem as one of the obstacles to justice and public safety in Indian country. Commissioners will testify about the report's findings and recommendations in front of the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs on Wednesday. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
Cold weather continues on the northern plains and propane is out of reach for many tribal residents. A Minnesota tribe is stepping in to help. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
An estimated 5,000 homes on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation depend on propane for heating. The reservation, which straddles South Dakota and North Dakota, is dealing with a very sharp spike in propane prices. A Minnesota tribe with a history of charitable giving is stepping in to help. The Shakopee Midwakaton Sioux Tribe is supplying $500,000 for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe to buy propane. North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple has also offered that state's help to ease conditions. The Shakopee Midwakaton is also assisting two other tribes with propane issues. The Yankton Sioux Tribe in southeast South Dakota will receive $300,000 for propane, and the Santee Sioux Nation in Nebraska is set to receive $70,000. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
Now is your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. You are now joining. Now joining us is Sam, and who else is out there?
Barbara.
Hi. It's time for Barbara and Sam to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you, Kristen, and thank you, Nat. And yes, please call in 877-500-5266 to support KBOO Community Radio during our winter membership drive. This is the evening news, as you've been listening. We'd like to send a thank you out to Andrew in Hillsboro, who is renewing his membership. Welcome back, Andrew. And he is donating, to paraphrase, because we give them heck. And just so you know, we have only $80 to go on our $200 goal for this hour.
But we could do more. We don't have to stop at $80. So you can, as much as you want to give us, just give a call right now at 877-500-5266. Go online. You can join KBOO by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the tip jar. And every bit you can give us will help. And yeah, we have $80 to match our goal, but goals are just the beginning of what our dreams are. So help us match our dreams.
Yes, and we can also thank you with a KBOO audio flash drive. 4 gigs of all kinds of exclusive content available only on this flash drive, including a 12-part history of KBOO that we produced last year for our 45th anniversary. That's right, we've been around since 1968, providing a forum for community concerns, great music of truly infinite variety, and providing a space where people can talk to each other, talk to their community, and represent their community. And you can support that by calling 877-500-5266.
So you might wonder, well, how much do we need to give? Well, actually, that's up to you. But what we really like you to do is to give us $10 a month, and we take it out of your bank account electronically. And if you call 877-500-5266, we have many phone answerers just happy and waiting to take your call, and they'll walk you through the steps of how to become a monthly contributor to KBOO. We also will if you don't have, if that's too little, if that's, if you don't have that much money and you still want to become a member, it's easy. You can do $5 a month. You could do our, what we call our regular subscription rate, which is $40 a year. I remember when it went up to $40 a year in 1980, and it hasn't gone up since then. So KBOO is a place where inflation only affects us on the outputs, but as far as the inputs go, we'll take whatever we get. So give a call at 877-500-5266.
In the latest news from U.S.
Thousands of Bosnians counted demonstrations in the sixth day of protests in cities and towns across the country. The protests began last week in Tuzla when police clashed with unpaid workers from the detergent manufacturer Dida and other formerly state-owned companies. Around 100 workers still working at Dida have not been paid for almost 2 years. Over the last several months, laid-off workers camped out in front of the factory and picketed administration buildings. When officials failed to respond, other workers and youth joined the laid-off employees, and protests began to have a wider focus on the problem of unemployment in general. Government officials in the Tuzla and Zenica regions have resigned, and protesters are demanding the resignations of other government leaders. The unemployment rate in Bosnia and Herzegovina is estimated to be between 27 and 40%, and among young people, the unemployment rate may be as high as 70%.
Now, in the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, the U.S. government is considering waiting for Afghan President Hamid Karzai to leave office before completing a security pact that would maintain a presence of U.S. troops beyond 2014. Under the Security Pact, the U.S. would leave more than 10,000 troops in Afghanistan for counterterrorism and training of Afghan troops after the U.S. military officially withdraws from the country at the end of the year. The refusal of President Hamid Karzai to sign a bilateral security agreement with the United States forces will make it less likely that U.S. troops will be able to remain in the country at all. President Karzai has said that any security agreement that he would agree to sign would need to wait until after the elections in April.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. So call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Mike McNulty, Steve Sherritt, Don Merrill, and Lisa Waldo. The producer and engineer is Sequoia Wright. Special thanks to the reporters from Free Speech Radio News. You can find more national and international stories at their website, fsrn.org. KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomath on translator K282BH at 104.3 FM, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. I'm Nat Parker.
I'm Kristen Yount. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Wednesday, talk radio host Lisa Loving speaks with journalist and author Dean Starkman about his new book, The Watchdog That Didn't Bark, The Financial Crisis and the Disappearance of Investigative Journalism. At 9, we speak with educator, writer, and activist Mike Rose about his book, Why School? Reclaiming Education for All of Us. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, the Dirtbags here. Dirtbag host Glenn Anderson and guest Jim Gilbert talk February gardening tasks, including a discussion on pruning grapes and kiwis, plus Ever thought of growing citrus in Portland? You can, and Jim will show you how.
Good night, Kristen.
Good night, Nat.
And welcome back. We are, I'm Sam.
I'm Barbara, and we're here to help you become a member of KABU right now by calling 877-500-5266 or going online at kboo.fm, and you can click on the tip jar and become a member that way. And Sam and I, we're just talking about all the things that we've learned over the years, my years being a few more years than Sam's, of how to become a good radio person and all the things we still have to learn. And this is a lot of what KABU is about, is it's always a process of learning. And I feel like everything that we do here, a lot of us started out doing radio at KABU without knowing anything and never having been on the air. And sometimes the results were pretty atrocious to begin with. But many of the people who you could barely listen to in the beginning have become outstanding broadcasters. And that's one of the things that KABU does, is it opens up the opportunity for people to really rise to the occasion and to really find what their passion is and to really rise to the top of their abilities. And we're asking you right now to not only support that, but to support that in those of us who you hear on KABU, but support that in yourself. Because right now, the ability that we're asking you to rise to is to help support us with money. So give a call right now at 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm. And think about how much you can really give us. And if you're thinking, oh, I could give you $5 a month, well, what about $10 a month? What about $20 a month? At least give it a go for a little while, and maybe you'll have to pull back to 10, but try it. Just think about how much we mean to you, how much you get from KABU and listening to us every day, and how different our news is from the news you hear anywhere else. And think about how you value that, and if you can find the money somewhere in your pockets, in your bank account, in your mind, in your IOUs or whatever, give a call at 877-500-5266 and become a member of KABU right now.
Yes, as our friend Sam Parrish, who is now getting ready on the boards across the window from us, as he always says, how much is how much do you think you owe on your KABU bill? And It's up to you. $5 a month, $10 a month for the membership, $20 a month, $50 a month. What is KABU worth to you? And again, don't forget that you can come down to 20 Southeast 8th Street, where our studio is located. Avenue, thank you, Sam. And that's 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just off of Burnside, on the east side of the Burnside Bridge. And you can come in, give your pledge in person, and after you've given your pledge, maybe you'd like to volunteer at KABU. I remember when I started here, I was dead set on getting a music show.
How did you start here, Sam?
That was it. I had been listening for a long time and wanted to get involved, and it was surprisingly easy. I came to a volunteer orientation, spoke to Ani, and I was in. They have a very throw you into the deep end form of learning here.
Right, and at the deepest end you can fall into actually is the news.
And that's where I wound up.
Right, that's maybe the deep end of the pool full of sharks.
Oh yeah.
But you swim through those sharks and you put out a newscast every day. And some of the sharks, you can help us to fend off, because some of the sharks are monetary needs. It's those things that cost money. It's the cost of recording equipment. It's the cost of electricity bills. It's the cost of having a modicum of paid staff who are guiding all the volunteers that are working in the news department, doing public affairs shows throughout the rest of the day, doing all the incredible music that you hear throughout the day. And we need money to support that. We need money to pay the same kind of bills you pay, and then bills you couldn't even imagine having to pay. So give us a call right now at 877-500-5266 and become a member of KABU. Become a member of this ever-growing and interconnecting community of people who care about so many things that matter, who care primarily about each other as opposed to just caring about ourselves. And that's the first, that's a big step. When you call 877-500-5266 and become a member of KABU, you've taken that step outside of self-interest and into a larger community interest. And in fact, you'll find that you're not just helping us by calling 877-500-5266. You're really helping yourself to become part of a greater good.
And you're helping each other, too. Our listeners in the Gorge and down in the northern Willamette Valley listen via our translator towers in Hood River and in Philomath. And those also cost money, as do our regular transmitter towers. That all comes to $56,000 a year. Now, if every one of our 45,000 listeners, and I know you're out there, if every one of you gave a $10 donation monthly and became members, we would not only have 100% membership as opposed to 10% membership, but we would have all of our costs covered amply for the year.
So actually, let's call out to everybody of you, all those 40,500 people
That's
who
right.
are not members but are listening.
Plus.
Right now, give a call at 877-500-5266 and become a member of KBOO. You can also go online to kboo.fm and click on the tip jar. Thanks for listening.
To celebrate Valentine's Day and Oregon's birthday, KBOO Community Radio will host a special day of news and public affairs programming. For Love of a Better World will be a 12-hour special focusing on the transformational place we find ourselves, solutions to get out of the muck, and the groups and individuals who are fighting the good fight. For Love of a Better World, KBOO's News and Public Affairs 12-hour special, February 14th, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Tonight, we bring you a special membership drive edition of Out Loud, the history of the gay press in Portland, a panel presentation examining the power of the LGBT press to inform and celebrate the LGBT community in Portland. This panel took place on Thursday, January 23rd, 2014, at Portland State University. We'll hear from Rupert Kennard, one of the original staff members with Just Out, where he helped the publication win the National Gay Press Association Award for Best Overall Design in 1983. And the panel begins with Renee Lachance, covered lesbian events as the women's editor for the Northwest Fountain and served as the editor of the Cascade Voice and was co-founder and publisher of Just Out.
I just really think it's important to sit here and tell these stories and remind people of what our history was, because as I go out and about in the world, I find people who moved here in the 90s or after the Y2K, and they don't remember my years at Just Out, or they don't remember what we went through with the Oregon Citizens Alliance, and I think it's really important to keep reminding people of those things. So history, I was contemplating history. I spent my life. Drop the hat. I spent my life documenting the present and creating a vehicle to get those words out. Now those words and that vehicle is history. And it's just difficult to wrap my head around that because I'm still very much in the present. And then when you think about history, it's always often, I should say often, because I think it's changing, but it's often represented as chronological and linear, but it's not. Each point of history has its own versions, its own observations, its own conclusions, and they contradict one another. It's impossible to reflect the people, the hours, the bitter blow-ups, the fights, the daily celebrations that happen with each one of those points of history. And as a journalist, it was a challenge to document those events accurately. I learned early on that at any event, you had to talk to a number of people to find out what happened. Each person would perceive the event differently, and in the middle, where all the perceptions met, lay the truth. And so it was important to talk to people from different cultures, different perspectives, different regions, to get what was true so that I could present in the pages of Just Out and what we did with the staff, the most honest representation and the most unbiased representation of what was happening. So in 1978, I came out running full steam ahead. There were so many wrongs to be righted, so much to do. I mean, I was 22. Where do you begin? The first thing I remember was California's Briggs Initiative in 1978 that would ban all gay and lesbian people from working in public schools. You know, as a kid, 20, 21, 22, this was happening. That just seemed unreal to me and extremely unjust. At the same time, Harvey Milk was elected as an openly gay man to serve San Francisco City Council. Then he was assassinated, and his murderer was sentenced to less than 8 years in prison by demonstrating a Twinkie defense. This was beyond my comprehension of justice. Then there was Anita Bryant with her no homo promos to save the children that got us all to boycott Florida orange juice. How did I learn of these events? From a monthly bar rag called Northwest Fountain that I would pick up at the bar at the end of the night when I didn't pick up anything else. I grew up with the Oregonian delivered to my house every day and read the paper all my life. I worked on my high school newspaper. So it turns out I had newspaper ink running in my veins. It didn't take long after reading about these issues in the Northwest Fountain before I wanted to be a part of the change. The injustices were all so wrong. I went to work for the Northwest Fountain as their women's page editor, which was laughable. How did that happen? Well, I asked the publisher, David Porter. This is how anybody gets involved in newspapers. I asked him, why wasn't there any news about women in his paper? And he said, why don't you write it? And so I did. He allotted me an entire page to cover half the community. At the time, I thought that was a great stride. I wrote about women's musicians like Holly Near, Chris Williamson, Mae Christian. I wrote about the happenings at the local feminist bookstore, Woman's Place. And I wrote about everything else I could flush out about lesbians in our community. Mostly because I was curious, because I was hanging out with a bunch of gay men.